Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Good, The Bad, and The Backlog, the podcast where in each episode we play a game from our backlog and hop on here and have a chat about it. I'm your host, Adam, and today, as always, we are joined by my co-host. He was going to be a furry, but then he got alopecia. It's Kieran!
Oh, hi there. I'm not too sure about you telling people about my almost furry incident, but I think in the end, a little bit of alopecia did me a good service there.
It set you on the right track.
Yeah, stopped me from going into, well, dangerous territory.
Oh, yes. Unexplored waters there.
Yeah, unexplored furry water.
Yep. It's like swimming in a jar full of hamsters.
Yeah. No, I don't want to do that. God bless alopecia.
No one does. So, how have you been for the last few weeks?
For the last few weeks, I have been all right. A bit sick of work, but aside from that, I'm just gonna tell you what I've been doing.
Do it.
You ever listen to podcasts, and because it's obviously audio, you haven't got a clue what the people look like. I've just been going through ones that I've been listening to for ages, and then looking them up to see what the people look like, and it's really weird because you have an image of them in your head of what they're gonna look like, and then I mean, nine times out of ten, they're fat and bald.
Yep.
And even the women. And yes, I don't know why I've done it. I feel like it's ruined that kind of romantic, sexy nature I had in my head of everyone just being very attractive. It's like, God damn it.
Yeah, I know. You just sort of like visualize what somebody looks like based on their voice. And I've done this before with podcasts where I've been a guest on them. Like before I approached them or was like chatting to them or whatever, like who's one I can think of off the top of my head? Oh, like Pat from Retro Blast that I did a Metroid Prime episode with. I had no idea what he looked like. I was expecting him to look like a late 30s, really handsome, bearded, muscly guy, and he doesn't look like that at all. I mean, he's still handsome, but like he has the voice of like a lumberjack. So I was expecting like almost Chuck Norris.
Yeah.
But yeah, didn't match, but I mean, still a handsome man, don't get me wrong, but still, like, it sort of changes that mental image you have of people.
Yeah, it's really weird, and I don't like it.
Yeah. I wonder what people think that you look like.
I am actually a muscular, bearded lumberjack. That is me.
You have never lumbered a jack in your life.
I jack loads of lumber.
Okay, fine. I can imagine you jacking all that wood, so I suppose it checks out.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. My face isn't hard to find, by the way, because most of our listeners are people coming from my Instagram, so they already know what we look like.
Yeah, well, I'm a bald man with a beard, so I am every person, every podcast person. I'm not fat, though. I'm not overweight.
No, you're very slim.
I am very slim.
I am jealous of your metabolism.
It's all those vegetables, man.
And that's right.
Lots of water.
Ugh, no, I can't do it. I need my Pepsi Max and I need my meat.
Fair enough.
Keeps me going.
So how have you been these past few weeks anyway?
Yeah, not bad, I suppose. I'm really, really fucking tired. Like, so tired that I can't even express how tired I am, to the point where I'm thinking maybe I have like chronic fatigue or something. Or I'm thinking it's probably like seasonal depression because we're going into the colder months in Australia at the moment. So it's like dull and grey and
it's the worst.
Miserable, kind of like England every other day.
Pretty much, yeah. You're not wrong.
Yeah. But you guys, you get used to it. But here it just comes like every May, June, July, then I just sort of get hit with this feeling of lethargy and I just want to sleep all day. And since I've been working so much, I haven't had all that much time for games, unfortunately. And fortunately for me, my priorities are work, exercise, sleep, then games.
Yep.
So if I'm not fulfilling the first three, I don't get to games very often. And I should probably put like household chores above games because I need to like iron my clothes and shit like that. And you can't really multitask while you're doing that and playing games. So,
well, you know. It's true, but whether that's actually the case, I don't know. There's things I should definitely put above games in priority, but they end up being like far beyond them.
Yeah, I mean, I can get it. Like, I've got a pile of laundry in my bedroom that's been sitting there for about 2 weeks. It's clean.
Yeah.
I just haven't put it away. But things like ironing my clothes for work is a priority, and like cleaning the dishes and keeping my general living quarters neat and tidy,
yes,
is priority for me. Otherwise, I get hit like with crazy anxiety. So
it really annoys me when there's a big pile, yeah, of dishes that need sorting out.
Just, I know.
I've got to clean them.
I miss having a dishwasher, so I have to do it all by hand now. But at least I'm only cleaning my own stuff, so I only have myself to blame.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyway, speaking of blaming people and taking responsibility for your actions, what is the game that we have been playing this episode?
I like that segue. It's not as shit as some of our other ones. We have been playing Undertale.
Undertale is a 2D role-playing video game created by indie developer Toby Fox. It was released for PC and OS X in September of 2015 and was also ported over to PlayStation 4 and PlayStation Vita in August of 2017 and is on the Nintendo Switch as of September 2018 and the Xbox One as of March 2021. In the game, the player controls a child who has fallen into the underworld, which is a large secluded region under the surface of the earth, separated by a magical barrier. And in the underworld is monsters who have been banished there because they got into a war with humanity. So basically, you are this little human person who needs to navigate the underworld and try to survive and get home.
And with a story and setting set up like that, you could probably get away with changing the name from Undertale to Underwhelming. Am I right?
I don't know, because I'm not quite sure what you think of it yet.
I just mean that as a setup to a game, that's fairly simple.
Oh, yeah. I should mention as well, the game takes a lot of inspiration from old school RPGs. It's like a 16-bit pixel type of visual style. And it's also sort of inspired by Earthbound on the Super Nintendo, or the Mother series. Yeah. So it's very similar to that in some respects. And as a indie role-playing game goes, it's got a lot of interesting mechanics and different ideas that I haven't really seen anywhere else.
Yeah.
And I'll leave it at that, and we'll expand on that as we go.
Yeah.
Great. So do you have any experience with this game beforehand? What did you know about it before going in? What were your expectations? Walk me through it.
All right. So, my own personal experience with playing the game, I had none until we started playing for this episode. But because there was such a huge amount of fanfare for this game when it came out initially, I did know a fair bit about it. Not story so much or gameplay elements, but I did know about the whole kind of pacifist and genocide runs and the way you could, rather than kill all the monsters, you could talk to them and maybe like spare them or make them your friends, that sort of thing.
Right.
But yeah, not too much. I was more familiar with the music actually, because there's a game music cover group called Pixel Mixers, which I used to kind of take part in sometimes, and they did like an indie album, and a few people did some Undertale tracks, and yeah, the music was really good. Like that for me already was one of the best features of the game was the music. But yeah, it was kind of going in sort of blind in every other way. I knew what the graphic style was like, but that's it. And playing through it, it was all pretty new to me.
Yeah, likewise. Before I tell you my experience, Toby Fox, the guy who made this game, basically made it entirely by himself.
Yeah.
Other than, he had one other person helping him called Temmie Chang, who did the art.
Mm.
But Toby Fox, fun fact, when I was looking at his Wikipedia page, he has composed music for Little Town Hero and Pokemon Sword and Shield and Super Smash Bros. Ultimate.
Do you know if he did all that after his work on Undertale?
Well, apparently he got his start composing for a webcomic called Homestuck, which I've never heard of before.
No.
But I think he went from Homestuck to Undertale, and then that opened up, you know, all these other opportunities to do stuff. And I think his credit for Super Smash Bros. Ultimate is just the fact that they use some of Undertale's songs in there.
Right.
He probably has remastered it or recomposed it or something like that. So
it's probably been reorchestrated to fit into the Smash Bros. Universe. Yeah.
That's it. So you know all the technical terms because you went to music college.
Yeah.
He played them instruments in the computer. He got the music in the computer and it come out the game.
What I like is that Toby Fox has a good castrato.
He got a good sound.
Do you know what castrato is?
Fucking no, I don't.
it's like when...
Is that where like you sit on someone's face and fart?
It's a term to describe... a pitch of singing, and it's like only achieved when you castrate boys.
Oh, okay. So I wasn't that far off.
It's kind of in the name, yeah.
Okay, I had no idea.
I don't think Toby Fox is actually a castrato, but I have no proof to say the otherwise.
Is that actually a legitimate thing, or did you just make that up?
No, it's a thing. I don't think it's still a thing.
Okay, so it's the scream of little boys when they get castrated. Wow. Okay. anyway, moving along. My exposure to the game is basically I'd only really seen mentions of it on YouTube videos and stuff, like top 10 lists, and it made the rounds a few years ago in like What Culture and just basically like a bunch of top 10 lists about like choices of video games and subverting expectations and stuff like that. So I kind of knew about it based on that, but not a whole lot of details. Like, I didn't know any of the setup. All I really knew, like you, was that you could get through this game by not killing a single thing and being completely pacifist. So with that in mind, when I came to play it, I just straight from the get-go was like, all right, I want to see if I can do this without killing anyone. And I got all the way to the end without killing anyone. And I should probably confess, I haven't finished it.
Oh, man.
Yes, I'm pulling a Suikoden like you did.
Well.
All right, this is like the second time that I've not finished a game. The first one wasn't even an episode with you in it. It was for Zelda Minish Cap, the bonus episode.
Okay.
So, yeah.
It's all right.
Two against me.
Yeah, you had ammunition, so that's fine.
Yeah. So, I'm just going to say straight from the get-go, I got to the quote-unquote final boss, which actually turns out to be the second to last boss.
Yeah.
And you are forced to fight him regularly, and I could not beat him. I tried like 20 times, and I'll explain more later on about why I couldn't beat him. So I got that far, couldn't do anymore, and I had to rage quit. I'll probably come back to it one day, but before this episode, rage quit.
I think you should. I mean, I guess you've seen... Did you YouTube the ending after that one?
I didn't necessarily watch like the ending play out exactly, but I did watch a sort of like analysis video or recap type of video, which explained like the broad strokes of what happens afterwards. So I have a fairly decent idea, but I'm sure you can probably expand on it a little bit more.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I'll try my best.
Yeah. All right. So setup wise, lay it on me. What's the story? What happens when you boot up this game? Who are you? Where are you going? And what did you have for dinner?
Okay, first off, for dinner I had pasta with lots of beans and pulses. It was delicious. How the game starts, you have a little intro cutscene that's just very nice little still images of this child going to the top of the mountain, falling in, and then when you press play, you wake up as this child on the ground in a sort of dungeony cave sort of thing.
It happens really abruptly, actually.
Really quickly, yeah.
Yeah, like I actually got, when I booted it up, I was like, I didn't even move because I was like, is this a cutscene? What's going on? Like, I didn't know what was happening. And there was no prompt on screen to tell me that the game had actually started.
Yeah, there's no loading or anything. You just kind of, you're there.
Yeah, I spent like 30 seconds just watching this screen and I'm like, yeah. What's happening here?
just ready for a loading screen.
Exactly.
So used to it. Yeah, so you wake up there on this kind of bed of flowers in the darkness. You walk around for a bit. I think you then encounter a flower that you talk to briefly. Is that right? I don't remember. Or do you get attacked by something and then Toriel appears coming to save you?
How can you not remember this?
It's been a long time ago, man. It was like...
It was days
three
ago.
3 days.
Even I remember. Okay.
And the worst thing, I've done it twice now. So, whatever.
Oh, Jesus. Okay, so clearly you need to start taking some ginkgo biloba tablets to improve your memory.
Improve the memory.
what happens is you meet this flower called Flowey, and he is basically very nice to you, and you have a little chat, and then he teaches you some stuff, and then all of a sudden, he completely turns on you and starts attacking you in a really sudden shift, which caught me off guard. And then it turns out he's a bad guy, and then he's about to kill you. And then this kind of like bull woman or like some cow lady type of thing.
Definitely a bovine of some sort.
Yeah. Some sort of animal that would be worshipped by India as a god.
Yeah.
thumbs up if you get that reference. anyway, she comes in, saves your ass, and then is like, "Oh, a child. Oh, I love children. Oh, I haven't seen a child in a while." Follow me, child.
That's exactly how I imagined her voice.
Yeah. Or maybe she's more cow-like. She's like, "Oh, child. I love children. A child."
And then she just shits on the floor and walks away.
Lactates. anyway, she saves you and then takes you home and tries to keep you forever.
Well, before she takes you home, you have to go through the whole kind of learning the ropes sort of thing, going through tutorials. She gives you a phone as well where you can contact her, and she kind of occasionally calls you asking some very random stuff like, "Do you like cinnamon or butter beer?" I forgot what she asks you for. Man,
butterscotch.
Maybe I do need to get on that ginkgo. Yeah,
you too.
Butterscotch, that's the stuff.
Butterscotch.
It was butter beer. Hello, we're in fucking Harry Potter land. Yeah, that's just kind of teaching you the ropes and the puzzles and stuff. It's pretty funny. You encounter like a quirky little rock that won't be pushed onto the lever. It kind of introduces you to the little quirks of the game. It's all very nice and easy.
And she does mention try not to kill anything, or please don't kill any monsters.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you encounter a training dummy, and you can go into that into a combat situation. And just for a heads up, on my first run, I did a genocide playthrough, so I immediately attacked the dummy. And I don't think Toya was too happy about that. But then on my second run through, I did a pacifist run, and I tried to not attack the dummy. I just checked it and then like spared it. Toya was happy about that.
Yeah.
And you get through that, and then you get to Toriel's house.
Cool. Let's pause and discuss the battle system then, since you've brought that up.
Yeah, sure. So, at first, you think it's going to be a typical classic RPG one where you can just attack or like use magic or stuff, but no. You've got four options at the bottom. You have fight, then you have act, you have item, and you have mercy. So, item is exactly as it sounds, just use an item. Fight, it brings up this sort of timing bar where you have to line up the moving line in the middle to get the strongest attack. Similar to many like limit breaks in some Final Fantasy games and other games. It's just a timing thing.
Oh, you know what it reminds me of? Like Mario Golf. Like when you're setting your shot up, you have to like pause it on
yeah,
like a little icon
exactly
moves.
That.
You have to pause in the... Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a golf game.
Yeah.
Except for it doesn't kind of bounce back once it reaches the end. If you missed your opportunity, that's it. You've missed the fight. You've missed the attack.
Right.
And that'll just deal the most damage depending on how close to the center you get, I think.
Yeah.
And then when the enemy has a turn, they'll do... This is like very varied, but the general kind of principle is you have like a little square in the middle with your heart in. You can move the heart around and the enemy will almost do a sort of a bullet hell sort of attack at you where there'll be lots of little projectiles or something in this box that you've got to dodge. And if you get hit by it, that you take a bit of damage. It's really cool. It's like a little mini game inside the combat. It's very cool.
Yeah.
I've not really seen anything quite like it.
I really do appreciate how unique it is. And I'm going to start this off with a positive.
Mm-hmm.
I love the fact that you were given the opportunity to not kill anything. That's something that I haven't really seen before in many other games. And I was all about it. So when I played on pacifist, I would never fight anything. I would always go to act or mercy, which if you choose mercy, you can either spare them or flee. And the way that you keep a monster alive or I guess, resolve a fight when you're playing pacifist is you need to go to act, and then it will give you a couple of options depending on what the monster is. Like, if there's a dog monster, sometimes you can pet them, and then that will appease them, and then their name will turn yellow, and that's an indication that you can spare them, and that will end the fight and give you gold. If you choose to run away or flee, you leave and you don't get any gold at all. I mean, the fight's over, but you don't get any rewards for it. So you're encouraged to spare them and choose the act stuff to get them to the point where they'll just leave. So it's to like basically mentally beat them down so they don't want to fight anymore or appease them.
Yeah.
So I love that.
And it's different for every encounter as well.
Yeah. Which is also a pain in the ass.
It is a pain in the ass at first. Yeah. Especially like some of the bosses take fucking ages. It's a long time, and you have to go through the same sort of bullet hell style combat situations to avoid their attacks, even when you're like not dealing damage to them. So it's like you really have to make them trust you over the whole thing. It's like the combat doesn't change even if you are aggressive towards them. It's the same sort of fight, except for you are just wearing them down mentally rather than physically.
Exactly. And here's the thing, I hate shoot 'em ups. I hate bullet hell. The only thing close to a bullet hell that I like is some of the combat in Nier and Nier Automata.
Yeah, I was going to say that's this game reminded me of like that sort of thing, actually, the Nier combat.
I would suggest you go and play Nier to see how they do it right, because I hated it in this.
Yeah, I didn't like it in what I've played of Nier, so maybe it's different strokes for different folks.
Yeah, I couldn't stand it. I hate how slow the heart moves, because I felt like, look, I'm sure it's probably more responsive on PC or something, but to use the joystick or the D-pad on my Xbox, which is what I played this on, by the way, it felt like the heart wasn't responsive enough. It wasn't moving fast enough. And the bullets and the shit that's coming towards you go so fast sometimes that you can't keep up with it. And I just felt like it was really unfair how slow you moved compared to how slow or how quick the bullets coming towards you were. So that was a huge amount of frustration for me.
Okay.
And I really struggled with the battle system to the point where, you know how people would complain in the old days about random battles and stuff?
Mm-hmm.
How much they hate those? I loved random battles in old JRPGs. But in this one, and bear in mind, I don't think it's actually random. Most of the fights are pre-planned, but they sort of just appear like random. And every single time one of them happened, I was like, oh no, not again. Ah, fuck. So it really irritated me.
Okay, that's fair enough. I kind of feel the exact opposite. For me, the timing of the heart was perfect. And I say that because it just felt like every sort of bullet hell situation that you had to go through seemed to be designed, like it looked random, but it seemed to be designed in such a way where it's done fairly. Like you can, if you time it right, you can get into the safe spot or get past most of them without any trouble. And I honestly think if they like increase the speed of the heart maneuverability, it would lessen the challenge. And I think the challenge is quite fair. I guess one thing about doing the pacifist run and not leveling up your health so much is that you do have to rely on having health items if you do get hit. And that did catch me out on my second run, because I did attempt a pacifist run through. So I definitely died a hell of a lot more, got game over a hell of a lot more on the pacifist run than I did genocide, that's for sure.
I think that's where my problem laid, because I, straight from the get-go, was like, pacifist, this is going to be fun. Not realizing that... See, I was under the impression that the pacifist run was basically going to be exactly the same as the genocide run, except the way that you progress by not killing enemies had some sort of moral impact in the story. I did not know that if you choose pacifist run, you do not level up whatsoever. Your HP stays low as fuck, and it becomes increasingly more difficult as you progress. So going into that first was probably a really big mistake for me, and negatively impact my enjoyment of it for sure. Also, spoiler alert, because we're probably going to start talking spoilers very shortly, but yeah, I got to the final boss, who is this monster king named Asgore. And oh, and here's the thing, it pulls the wool over your eyes, because the entire game, when you're playing pacifist, you can get through all of the fights without killing anything, but as soon as you get to this boss, you have to fight him. And at this point, if you've played pacifist, you are still on level 1. You still have only 20 health or HP. And I didn't have enough healing items. I didn't have a strong enough weapon. Didn't have a strong enough armor. And he slaughtered me literally 20 times before I just gave up completely. So I'm very irritated about that.
Okay, well, I never got to Asgore in my past fish run, so I can't say if that was... I would have had the same situation. But I remember the fight being pretty long on Genocide, so yeah.
I think... because I was Googling, how do you beat Asgore in Pacifist? And it says that you actually can't do a true Pacifist playthrough until after you've played the game once before already. So technically, I'm on a neutral run. And what that means is once I beat him, I can reload the save from just before the fight with Asgore and then replay it and then get a true Pacifist ending or something. So there's literally no way to beat him and just spare his life in the first time around you play this game. So it really chaps my hide, man, that I've let everything survive up to this point. And then I get to the final boss and I have to fight him when I have no levels. I'm like, oh, it's so irritating.
Yeah.
Slap in the face.
Yeah. That is quite a big annoyance. It's a shame when you get to these sort of things in games where there is just something preventing you from progressing. And it kind of makes you think, like, maybe if they just put a, like, you've tried it 5 times now, would you like to skip option so you can just, like, get to the end rather than actually having to deal with it?
Here's the part where it rubs salt in the wounds, because if you go to act and you talk to Asgore, the player tells Asgore how many times they've died to him. So, like, I would do it. And if you talk to him 3 times, by the way, it drops his attack and defense, so... that's why I was talking to him. So I talked to him the first time and it's like, you tell Asgore he has killed you 20 times already. Asgore looks down in sadness or something. And I'm just like, yeah, I know. It's fucking annoying. Stop killing me, Asgore. The closest I got was his health down to half. And that was it.
Oh, God. Still a long way to go then.
Uh-huh. That is annoying. And also, other than like Googling how to beat some of the bosses, I didn't really use a guide, so I completely missed out on a town called Temi Village or something.
Yes, if you had found that,
yeah,
you could easily use that village to get tons of cash so that you could have a good amount of healing items. Because there's like an item you can buy in a nearby shop. I think it's some glasses, like a cloudy glasses or something. You buy them for 20 and you can go to Temi Village and sell them for 50. And they'll just continually buy them, so you can make hundreds in no time at all.
Ah, god damn it.
Yeah.
All right, well, I'm going to have to do that, then that way I can just buy shit to heal myself so I don't die, because I literally only have like 3 healing items left, and I can't afford to buy any more. And you can't sell your items to regular vendors unless it's Temi Village. Temi Village is the only place that will buy your shit, which is so annoying.
Yeah, it's a weird place, Temi Village. So it's you must have encountered the enemy Temi, which is just like a weird extremely happy cat that just screams in like lowercase and capital letters in any random order. And it's just a village full of them.
I thought it was a dog with arms, bicep.
Oh, it might
arms
well be. I thought they were cats with wigs on.
I thought it was a dog with bicep. I mean, like arms. Flexing next to their heads. I have no idea. The art's really crazy.
The art is insane. I like it, but it's insane.
Maybe let's talk about the art then.
Okay, well, I guess we can start with the main character that you play as. No name, it's one you can name, but I think... unless I'm getting this wrong, I think the, like, official name is Chara?
Oh, I thought the official name was, like, Frisk or something.
I don't know. I've seen Frisk in a YouTube video, but I didn't realize if that was just the person who made it. But I could be wrong. Chara might be one of the other humans that has gone to the underworld.
Oh, my God.
Either way, I named mine Fitz, based on the main character from the Farseer trilogies. Yeah, that's my reason. What did you name yours?
I named mine Adam because that's my name.
Okay, fair enough. Sometimes I don't like to name characters my own name.
Yeah, I feel weird about it sometimes.
Because then if I die, I don't feel sad. So it's a bit ambiguous as to the gender of the character, but I'm going to call mine a boy.
Yeah, oh, I actually do have a note on this. I do appreciate that... the main character, it's ambiguous as to what gender it is, so it could pass as either a male or a female. So I think they did a really good job designing them to be gender neutral, I suppose.
Yeah.
I think canonically it is a girl, though.
Okay. Well, I'm going to say he because mine was Fitz. He's a boy in my playthrough. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
He has like long hair, long sort of brown hair, a stripy shirt, and he just wears this extremely stoic sort of nonchalant expression on his face all the time. It's very funny, actually.
He looks kind of lobotomized.
Yeah, just looks sort of like done with the world at all times.
Yeah, so unimpressed.
Just extremely unimpressed. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, I like that too. So other than the main character, there is this other character who is perhaps the most famous character of the game. And I've seen, when I did a little Googling beforehand, I've seen a lot of fan art on this character.
Okay.
And
I'm curious which one you're going to say, actually.
Well, I've also seen some like sort of furry hentai-ish fan art.
Oh man, what? This character. Is it Toriel?
No, it's Sans.
Oh, Sans. Skeleton. Okay, yeah, fair enough. I haven't seen any fucking furry fan art. That's, I mean, he's a skeleton. What? It's the opposite of furry.
He's not an animal or anything, but I've seen fan art of him and Papyrus fucking,
yes.
Even though they're brothers.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Apparently, there's this big thing, a slight tangent, but apparently Undertale's fandom or whatever is incredibly toxic and problematic, apparently. And they constantly do like really cringy shit and make a lot of cringy fan art of like incest and like the main character, for example, being a child. They sometimes draw fan art of them having sex with Sans and Papyrus and Undyne and all this sort of stuff. So,
man, let's not focus on that side of the internet, please. Those people are always going to be out there and they're fucking weird and they need to stop.
True. Actually, the fandom apparently is so toxic that it bullied Markiplier from finishing a series of playthroughs for Undertale because like the comments on the videos were getting so crazy that he just was like, fuck this, I'm not playing this game anymore.
Wow. Yeah, people are weird. If any of you fuckers are weird and are listening to this podcast, go to Spreadshirt and buy our merch and then think about your life decisions.
We welcome the weirdos, just not the Undertale hentai.
Yeah, no weirdos. Well, if you do fan art, just don't post it on the internet.
Yeah, if you do fan art, do it of us fucking each other.
Yeah, exactly. But no underage children. That's outrageous.
Oh, yes. Otherwise, we'll be stuck at home with ankle bracelets and can never leave the house.
Yeah. And I've already got one on my left ankle, so I don't want another one on my right. But at least it would stop muscle imbalances.
Yeah, I was like, don't you want some symmetry? But anyway, Sans is the very iconic skeleton character you meet along the way after you're done with Toriel. And yes. He is kind of like the first friend you make.
And you're right, actually, because I've seen a lot of GIFs of him and Papyrus. And they are things I had seen before playing the game. The GIFs of him winking or doing like a weird dance. So that was cool to see that finally in context. And yes, I straight away loved Sans.
Yeah, I liked him as well. Actually, Papyrus was my favorite.
Yes.
Both of those two characters were really interesting, and I was surprised at how good the writing is in general, because the characters feel like identifiable characters with unique personalities, not just the standard sort of classic JRPG non-flavor text NPC shit that you normally see in old games.
Yeah, yeah, it's really well written. It's quite smart. Some of the characters are obviously like crazy, they're nuts, but they don't have to speak much for you to know exactly what their personality is, and it's just like there's enough dialogue been given to these characters where it doesn't like wear you out. You don't get bored of reading it. It's only like a few text boxes. You get their vibe. You know what they're about.
I'll say there is one that totally overstays their welcome.
I think that's Alphys. Right.
Oh yes.
Yeah. I think that's the purpose. It was frustrating, but I thought like it was intended to be frustrating.
Yeah, I know, but like
the phone calls they did continually piss me off at times.
Yeah.
When it was just like you take two steps, have another phone call or a fucking social media update.
Oh yeah. Oh my god, that was so annoying. Apparently she's like a real fan favorite though, because she is so relatable to the really sort of socially awkward people that played this game and loved it. So right. They're like, yay, Alphys. But when I was playing it, I was like, oh, fuck off, Alphaz. Yeah. I hate you.
I don't know. I thought it was like a piss take on the state of society. Just like constantly tweeting and that sort of thing. And I thought, this person is a joke.
Actually, that makes a lot more sense. Yeah. That's like way smarter. Maybe everybody else like me missed the point and were like, oh, she's damaged like I am. I love Alphaz. Whereas it was actually supposed to be society is damaged. Let's fucking not be like this.
Yeah. That is kind of how I took it. I figured Toby Fox was like, he clearly loves RPGs, but at the same time, he like sees the problem with the world. And he's kind of putting this all into one game, but
yeah,
not in a very serious fashion.
It is very meta.
It's very meta, and there's a whole lot of fourth wall breaking, and I love that sort of stuff.
Yeah, normally I do too. Look, I would love this game so much more if that battle system didn't irritate me so much, but I really do want to sink my teeth into it a lot more than I already have.
Yeah.
I just wish that there was like an auto skip so I didn't have to do any of the battles.
I know. I was thinking about this, that video games are one of the few sort of medias where if you get stuck, that's it. You can't progress.
Yeah.
Whereas in a film or whatever, you just fast forward, skip a few scenes and you've got the ending. It's like you could permanently miss out on seeing the ending of a game just because you can't get past one bit. It's like, what other things can you do that with? There's nothing. Like in a book, you know, unless the author doesn't release the final book. Then, you know,
George R. R. Martin.
yeah.
You have a point, because it's kind of like when you have a game that you really love and you want somebody else to play it and experience it the same way you do, but there might be like side quests that really expand the greater story or give like much more context. And I'm specifically thinking of like Nier and Nier Automata type of stuff where you could miss like vital information in really innocuous side quests and not even realize it. So my appreciation for it would probably not be nearly as much. You know what I mean? It wouldn't be as much as the person who quickly played it and then missed all this wonderful content and wouldn't have a clue because they either didn't feel like doing it or that it was too hard for them or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas in a film, you just watch it from start to finish and you have all the information if you pay attention.
Yeah, it's a strange situation. I just hope that games in the future think about this and have a little skip ban, if possible.
Yeah, remove all the gameplay. Just be a film.
Oh my god. This is amazing. Such a good idea.
I think we just like reverse engineered films. On the characters, though, so we've done a few. Alphaz is annoying, obviously. What'd you think of Metaton?
Oh, Metaton was the sort of person where, like, didn't really know what to make of him at first. I mean, it's a robot, so
yeah,
it's literally like a box with fucking arms and legs. It's a very typical robot. But, you know, I did enjoy Metaton, the constant kind of different interpretations of him with his singing, his sort of panel show, his cookery show.
Yeah.
This was the sort of stuff where, you know, I'm not going to say I was laughing out loud, but occasionally I would have gone, you know, breathing out my nose, like, I laughed. That sort of thing. And then his transformation into a weird sort of human robot at the end was very funny.
Yeah. I found his battle incredibly frustrating, but I liked that they sort of chucked in a whole bunch of different variety TV show genre stuff for him.
Yes. Yeah.
That was fun. So, liked him in that respect.
Like the quiz. The quiz was funny, where he just gets like continually harder and more ridiculous questions that you would never be able to answer. And then like the actual systems themselves change as you fight, which seems really clever to me. It's like where like the answers are continually changing so that you can never get the right answer, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then the cookery one was quite funny as well, how like you convince him not to use a human soul in the recipe and you have to like use the jetpack to get to the top of this thing to collect the herbs. Like, what is going on with this game?
Yeah, I did like that. I will say to Undertale's benefit, I appreciate how fresh most of the levels felt. It didn't really feel like I was repeating the same thing over and over again. It felt like each stage, each group of characters that I'm introduced to offered something new and different. So I wasn't bored exactly. Oh, I did mention I fell asleep a couple times, didn't
you? You did, that's true. I mean, it's quite slow at times. And there is a lot of, you know, walking between areas, which isn't particularly fun. But you're right. I don't think anything's like too spaced out. Like you don't have to repeat things all the time. And unlike in, let's say, a traditional Dragon Quest or Final Fantasy where the combat systems and the gameplay is the same all game round, in this game, yeah. It changes so often, and it's often in, like, every boss fight there's a new mechanic or it completely changing the gameplay. And I think stuff like that keeps it incredibly fresh. And even, like, backtracking at times. On my second playthrough, I was going back to a few areas, and there was characters that weren't there when you originally go through. So it can keep things fresh even when you are backtracking, which is pretty rare.
Apparently, after you finish the first playthrough, or you beat the first final boss, and you start again, or whatever, you can reload your save from in front of the final boss room and backtrack from there, and your save knows that you've beat it before, so it will initiate all this side content that wasn't there before you fought the boss.
Oh, that's
or
mad.
Beat the boss.
I had no idea about that.
Yeah. Also, apparently, if you kill anything at all, it will immediately lock you out of a true pacifist playthrough experience. Did you scrub your save before you played it the second time?
This is the thing. There's true pacifist, there's neutral, and then there's pacifist and, like, fucking genocide pacifist. So because I did the genocide run on first of all, I then got to the main menu, I reset the game. I didn't, like, delete my save file from the PS4 or anything. I just jumped straight back in. But apparently that will register. And I looked up the ending because I'm not going to do... By the time we record this, I haven't finished the pacifist run. So I looked it up, and apparently at the end, it's very similar to the true pacifist ending, but at the end, there's this small little cutscene which tells you that the game knows you've killed everyone in a previous playthrough. And it's like, oh, this is pretty fucked.
Yeah.
But I like it. It's pretty clever.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think I would really mind if I did a genocide thing and then a pacifist one, and it was like, oh, you killed someone in a previous life. Like, yeah, cool, whatever. I'll be happy enough to accept that as my ending.
Yeah.
Because there aren't, like, trophies and stuff tied to which ending you get, thankfully.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
So it's always like, depending on who you are or how you choose to play the game, it's like what I was saying with Life is Strange. You can play from beginning to end, basically get all of the trophies, and that ending is your experience. You don't have to replay certain things to get other trophies or whatever. You can just experience that contained experience as your own. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, I think Toby Fox has thought about a lot of these problems or just issues that players have with games and tried to find a solution to put into Undertale. For the most part, it's working really well.
I have a lot of respect for him. I might not have liked his battle system all that much, but you can't deny that Toby Fox is an incredibly talented person who has made a very successful game almost entirely by himself.
Oh, it's insane. It's insane.
Yeah.
I would be happy if I had just done, like, you know, a few percents of this game. If I had just done the music, I'd be happy with this game. But no, the fact that he's done the whole thing is quite the achievement, and props to him.
Yeah.
And to be honest, because this is one of those games which was severely hyped up when it came out, I naturally went in with sort of like low expectations, because I think I just have this sort of wanting to be contrary at times and just be like, everyone likes this, therefore I think it's going to be crap. And I think maybe that's evident from some of our other episodes. But in this case, fucking loved it, man. I'm actually incredibly shocked and pleased that this has lived up to the hype. At least for me.
Ah, I'm so surprised. Like, there are things about this that, you know, actually, legitimately, I thought you were going to dislike this game.
It took me like a few, I don't know, maybe like an hour to really get going. But I think the pacing is so well done, the characters and humor are so good that I can hardly fault it.
Okay. Yeah, no, I really did think that you weren't going to like it. I could imagine, for the record, anyone that's listening, we tend not to talk too much about what we think about the games prior to recording, because otherwise we burn through the conversation beforehand. That's a stupid thing to do. So I was expecting you to be like, yeah, it's good, but not that good kind of thing.
It's so average.
Like we sometimes do. It's painfully mediocre.
Yeah.
No. So, well, I'm glad you liked it.
No, I mean, I think, honestly, there might have been another one. Deadly Premonition, that I would like to go and replay from games that we've done on the podcast. But this is the first game where I, like, as soon as I'd finished one playthrough, I jumped into the next one. Being that it's a short game, that does help. but
yeah,
but yeah, not many other games have really had had me with an urge to just go straight back in to see the differences. But having an ability to play a game in a completely different manner, i.e. Genocidal Pacifist, does open it up to replayability a lot more than others.
Oh, yeah.
Because the differences are extreme.
Yeah, and the length is just right for doing that sort of
exactly,
thing.
Exactly, yeah.
It's not like, I don't know, like Mass Effect or something, you know? You have the option to do Renegade or Paragon,
mm-hmm.
but you'd need to play through an entire 40-hour experience
yeah.
and make different choices to get that other experience. But thankfully, like Undertale is just short enough where you can just do it and then jump straight back into it.
Yeah, and even on the second playthrough, you could probably do it quicker because you know what to expect. You know the puzzles, you know the,
oh, yeah.
you know how the characters and the enemies work. So you have the solutions at your hand and you can just run through the game pretty much.
Yeah, apparently there's a lot of extra content as well once you've done and you get to the second playthrough.
Damn. Well, it's hard to say because I'm doing it, like, I don't remember exactly how far I am. I'm probably like a third of the way in on my pacifist run. But there's so much that I would have missed in the genocide run because, like, the thing where you date Papyrus, that was
yes.
quite hilarious. And obviously, I fucking killed Papyrus. So,
yeah.
Yeah, it's all this stuff that you miss out on. And you kind of think you're missing out on it when you do the genocide run. Like, it makes you feel bad as well because these are generally pretty nice people. And you're like, well, I'm killing you because the game has the option to kill you. You don't really want to. And then when you do pacifist, you see all the things that that could have been, I guess.
Yeah, I really enjoyed like the dating stuff. I dated Papyrus. I dated Undyne. All of that was really fun and interesting and unique. So that was something that I'd never really experienced in a game before. I was like, oh, amazing.
Yeah.
There's a part where like you're dating Papyrus and he's like, I've got a secret on my body. Can you figure out where it is? And then it's like, what was it? It was spaghetti hidden under his hat or something.
Of course
it
is.
That was awesome.
Yeah, it's slightly insane.
Oh, speaking of skipping things... Mm-hmm. You can completely skip through certain dialogue as well.
Right, that doesn't surprise me. Is there anything in particular you're referring to?
The Metaton fight.
Mm-hmm.
If you die in it and you go back to the room where you were before, you can skip all of, I think it's like a couple of minutes of stuff where you're fighting the old version of him, then you need to trick him to turn around and flick a switch.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you just automatically tell him to turn around and you flick the switch.
It's like you already have the knowledge. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, like you know how to do it. So instead of going through the motions of...
You have to wait until the phone call from Alphys to tell you whether the off switch
exactly.
is. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so you can just skip all that stuff and then he just turns around, you flick the switch and then off you go to fight his final form.
That's cool.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Love the forethought of all that stuff.
It's like the game itself has a mind of its own and it knows when you
exactly.
know.
Exactly. It's kind of creepy, actually.
Yeah, it is. I didn't like to think about it too much.
Yeah.
I think it's made to feel a little bit creepy. I wanted to bring up the just like the facial animations of the characters, and in particular I'm thinking of Papyrus. This was particularly present in the dating scene where you could like depending on your action, he would make like a cute face with hearts or like rosy cheeks and an embarrassed face. And it's just like so kind of so well done. It's just like really funny, and it's played out a few times. Like there's that weird massive onion creature that comes out of the lake really slowly in a really bizarre, creepy fashion. Is it Onion San? And just like smiles at you and does weird faces, and oh man, it's weird. And I think there's a merchant as well that you just fucking buy or talk to them and their face goes all happy, but it's also really disturbing. And it's just something about the art style. It's hilarious, but it's slightly unnerving as well.
Yeah, it's almost like flash animation in a way, but like pixel art flash animation.
Yeah, yeah.
Like early 2000s online comic type of thing.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like the epitome is leading up to the final fight as well, where if you've seen it, it is incredibly disturbing. It's like fucking dentures and weird human body parts and eyes and stuff and fucking broccoli for legs and arms. And it's just weird and roses. I mean, the way that they've changed the graphic style for the final fight was one of those kind of shocking moments in games that I was not expecting. And it's funny because I was playing it with my housemate sat next to me at the time, and like even her just looking at the screen was literally just like, what the fuck is going on right now? And that was my expression too. I just had absolutely no idea, because it's almost like playing a completely different game, and it's so freaking weird, and I absolutely love it.
I am so bummed I couldn't get past that fight, because when I looked it up afterwards and I saw what the fight was that comes straight after that, I was like, what the fuck? What have I missed?
You would look at it and think, like, if you didn't know that that was from Undertale, you probably would not think that was Undertale.
Yeah.
Graphical style is totally different. And it just looks like an absolutely insane, weird mashup of fucking... I don't know, it's like a... what's it? When you just, like, put different pictures together, like a montage, that sort of thing.
I know what you mean, like...
A collage, is that the word?
Yeah, collage.
It's like a collage of weirdness stuck together. They've added animations to it.
Yeah.
And just weird psychotic music playing in the background.
Or an old-fashioned ransom note.
Yeah, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's perfect, though, because it makes you wonder, like, this is hopeless, I'm never going to win. And it makes you think that you're on this repeated cycle of, like, you're stuck in hell, you're never getting out of here, this is just your life from now on, and there's just enough changes each time for you to know that something's going to happen.
Yeah.
But it's so, so bizarre. It's like the increasing insanity of Toby Fox as he developed the game, and he just, like, decided to let everything go. He just went full mad at the end.
Yeah. Love that. I'm so bummed that I got stuck on that fight. I just wish that was a little easier.
I am bummed too, because that ending was like,
it would have been an
something else. Yeah. Even watching it, it would be funny, but it won't be the same.
No, I saw it. I definitely saw it. I just didn't experience it.
Yeah. It's a shame. It's a shame.
Yeah. But speaking of experiencing things, if I was a kid that fell into the underworld, I probably would have stayed with Toriel and not gone home.
Yeah. Did you try at first to return to Toriel's home? Like at first when she's going to lock the door through that long tunnel and is telling you to turn back.
Yeah.
And the only way you can progress is to go forward. Did you try like going back to the house to see if she would just be like, oh, you've come back. Well, let's just close the door and stay here forever.
No, I didn't. Did you?
No. I was tempted. I was like, I wonder if there was something going to happen. I wonder if she'll notice, but I couldn't be bothered because it was a long corridor.
Yeah, I think you're kind of like stuck into that anyway, so.
Yeah.
But well, that's cool.
Fine.
How'd you feel killing her for the first time?
I must say, I felt a little bit bad. I did.
Did it surprise you how much damage you did to her?
Yeah, it's fucking slaughtering her, man. It was... But it was horrible. And it's done really well. Like, even the bosses, sometimes, you know, they sort of give in. And you can see their gradual weakening. And
yeah.
You start to feel bad about attacking them and not giving them mercy. Like, Undyne as well. It was particularly good with Undyne. It's just... It makes you feel bad in a way that not many other games have been able to do.
Right. Yep. I don't like feeling bad, so
no.
That's why I just chose pacifist from the beginning.
It didn't make me feel bad enough to stop. But killing Papyrus was kind of sad, because I wanted to see how Sans would react to that I killed his brother. And you don't really get much until the very end, when you're just before approaching Asgore and you encounter Sans. Mm-hmm. And there's just one foot, he's talking to you, like, in his ordinary personality, then his pupils disappear. He stares at the camera and just calls you brother killer. And that did make me laugh.
Did he fight you?
No.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's interesting. I think at some point he does become like a secret boss.
Oh, that'll be interesting. Mm. Well, I'm just going to have to like go on YouTube and search for all the things you missed in Undertale sort of video, see if there's something like that.
Yeah, I do love how layered it is and how much there is to find. I just didn't have the time to do it.
Yeah, it's a sad state of affairs, but it is how it is.
God,
but that's
being
what YouTube
hard.
And the internet is for.
Yeah, exactly.
Secrets. Saving our time.
And also, FYI, when I said I fell asleep, I'm not blaming the game for making me fall asleep.
Well, you did say earlier on that you have, like, been really lethargic.
Oh, yeah.
Full of fatigue, so that's fair enough. That explains it, I think.
It was just my eyes. My eyes were so tired that, and the music was so relaxing.
Oh, it's true.
I was sitting on the couch and it was Saturday afternoon, about 2 o'clock. And I'm like, I need to sleep right now. So I had to turn the game off and I fell asleep for like 2 hours.
Damn. Speaking of relaxing music, did you have any favorite musics? That's not exactly a great term. Favorite tracks.
I mean, all of them were pretty good. None of them were particularly standout in the way that I can say, hey, that one track was really great. All across the board, all of them were pretty good. Even like straight from the beginning, I was like, oh. I even wrote a note which is like, oh, funky chiptune music. This is cool.
It was like consistently good. It was very catchy.
Yeah.
And there was a sort of nostalgia to it, I feel like. And some of it felt reminiscent or similar to other RPG music.
Yeah.
Whilst also remaining, it's like retaining its own character and being distinct to Undertale. There's the opera scene of Metaton, which combined with the scene, the music felt straight out of Final Fantasy VI. And even just like going through the forest and you've got that lovely little magical ice music, I'm going to call it. And it was just so charming and lovely. And it's just like that Toby has kind of analyzed classic RPG music and just...
You're on a first name basis now.
Yeah, me and my boy Toby. He likes to be called Big T. Mr. Fox.
Yeah, call him T-Fox.
It's like he's probably kind of analyzed what makes RPG music RPG music and then just made his own. It's proper good. I love it.
He's like Googled, what is good music?
What is good music and how to make it?
How to make good
music. How to make a game.
How to make a game.com.
Good job, Toby.
Yeah, very impressed, and he should be incredibly proud of himself.
Yeah, I'll buy you a pint next time you're around.
Yeah, and I'll make him beat the boss for me.
Yeah. We'll probably just like tell you a secret, which means you can skip it.
It's
in there all along.
Fuck. Okay, I'm glad you brought that up, because there are secrets in this game that I wish I'd known about if I'd used a fucking guide.
Okay, such as?
So there's this spider boss, and somewhere at the beginning of the game, there's a spider bakery where you can buy a spider donut.
Oh, yes.
If you buy a spider donut from the spider bakery in the ruins at the very beginning of the game, and then 2.5 hours later, you are at the spider boss battle against this spider queen chick, and you choose item and you eat that spider donut, she will not fight you.
Oh, she'll that's be interesting.
Like, yeah, she'll be like, oh, you are a patron of our bakery. You have donated to our cause. Thank you. I will not kill you. And if you don't do that, then you have to survive for 17 turns before a random spider shows up and tells them that you have made a purchase from the spider bakery at the beginning of the game. And she won't fight you.
Yeah, I had that one. I had used this fucking spider donut.
Oh, yeah.
Or whatever it was. Very early on, because I'm probably about to die in another boss fight. So, yeah, had I known, I might have tried to keep that.
Exactly.
But as it happens, I had to last the whole 17 rounds. I'm glad, because I seem to remember I was about to run out of healing items and probably about to die.
Yeah, that fight in particular was incredibly hard.
Yeah.
But not only that, there is apparently in the extra content after you finish the game for the first time, there is some sort of enemy somewhere where if you... So the first weapon you have by default is a stick, and this enemy is a dog. So if you keep the stick in your inventory, you can throw the stick and the dog boss will not fight you. I would chase the stick and leave.
Oh, man. It's so simple.
Yeah, but like, how would you know that?
Yeah, why would you keep this useless weapon?
Exactly.
When you've only got 8 spaces to have healing items and armor and stuff. You don't want to have a useless, worthless stick in it, do you?
You know how much I hate inventory management in games sometimes. Yeah. Those 8 slots, that was bullshit. But to be fair, I never had enough money to buy items to fill those 8 slots anyway.
Yeah. You know, I would have loved more. And you have got those boxes, the interdimensional boxes where you can store stuff.
Yeah.
But you're right. For most of the game, I could barely afford to have much in them anyway.
What a crime.
What a real crime.
So So what did you think of Asgore, the king of the monsters? What was your opinion of him when you eventually got to him?
He looked cool. I guess he was about what I was expecting. You want the king of the monsters to be a big, intimidating looking dude, then you know it's going to be a tough fight.
A bovine.
He's going to be a bovine, but he also looks more intimidating than Toriel.
Now, am I wrong or am I right that Toriel and Asgore were king and queen?
That's what I thought too. Yeah, because he says that his wife like left him for some reason, and it sort of gave me the impression that it was Toriel. And I'm sure if we googled that, we could find it in 5 seconds. But that's the impression I got. I mean, you don't encounter any other monsters in the realm that are similar species to Toriel and Asgore. So
yeah,
just putting two and two together.
Well,
that seems to make sense.
A quick Google has just said that apparently she was the queen.
Well, there we go.
Yeah.
That clears up that mystery.
Yeah. Open shut case.
I don't really have too much of an opinion about Asgore, to be honest, because
okay, so
you
not even
him once and then you fight him.
Not even his backstory? Did you get any of that?
Yeah. I mean, it was cool and...
Tragic?
Undoubtedly tragic. And I was totally expecting it to be tragic. And when you get to the end of the fight and you've got to fucking kill him or whatever, of course it feels bad. But not more than any of the other characters, really.
Okay. So would you say that, I guess, once you are guilted by killing all the characters, the amount of guilt that you feel at the end of the game is not nearly as much as the first few times that you've had to do it? You know what I'm saying?
I think...
Like guilt fatigue, where like after a while, you don't feel it.
It's like in real life. Yeah. After you killed one person, you feel bad when you shoot a child in the head or something. You feel bad about it, but once you've killed a whole score, it's all right, you know, because, you know.
Oh, Jesus. Well, you took it
I
there.
I have not killed any children. Just publicly state that, and I don't intend to.
I was thinking more like when your grandparents or your elderly aunts guilt trip you and are like, mm-hmm. God is watching you when you're masturbating, and... Like, the first few times you do it, you feel a bit guilty, but then now as an adult, you just jerk off.
Fucking dirty bastard.
Yeah.
That's what you see.
Yeah, and then you're just lying on the couch jerking off, and you're like, I hope you're enjoying the show, God.
Yeah.
Feel guilty. I'm putting on a fucking performance.
thanks for giving me these parts, God. You obviously intended me to use them.
Exactly. By yourself.
That's what hands are for.
Exactly. Yeah, I've got nothing to say about it other than what I've already said. So I guess let's just wrap it up.
Yeah. I think I do recommend it.
Okay.
That's all I can say. I think it's just such a cool and unique experience, unlike pretty much anything I've ever played. And yeah, just nice and compact as well. So
right.
You can get lots out of it if you want to. You could play it like a single campaign sort of game. It's just really good.
Would you recommend that it would be pacifist or genocide?
Oh, goodness. I think it's worth saying both. I mean, okay. if you don't want to have too much of a difficult go through, then I would guess go for genocide, just because I didn't have too much issue with that. I think it is a bit easier. Maybe for more character development, with some of the cool characters like Sans and Papyrus and Undyne, go pacifists, because I think you get a bit more out of that.
Okay.
So yeah, totally up to the player.
Hashtag choose genocide. I would recommend that if you are doing pacifist, follow a guide and be good at bullet hell things, because I fucking suck at them. And I think my displeasure with this game... Look, okay, I have to admit, the battle system is not that bad. It's just I fucking suck at those types of things. And I can't do it. It's just not in my brain to be able to do it. And that is incredibly frustrating for me, which is making me, like, it blows back onto Undertale because I hate myself for not being able to do it properly. But it's not the game's fault.
It's just because Adam
sucks.
Is terrible at video games. This is what we've learned today.
I'm great at some. Fucking suck at others.
It's all right. You can blame the controller for being too slow at moving the heart.
Oh, maybe it's just my elderly reflexes aren't up to speed.
That could be it too. Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah. All right. Well, I recommend that you do play it if you have the opportunity to. if you don't really care about indie games, don't bother. Because, I don't know, I mean, I'm not really an indie game type of person anyway, and I would probably have just preferred to have read about the lore and the story rather than play it myself. But, yeah, I mean, if it looks like something that interests you, go ahead and do it. It's good.
Yeah.
That's it.
I mean, if you're just the sort of person who only plays annualized sports games and COD, don't think you're going to like it.
Analyzed sports games.
Analyze.
Undertale, the anal option.
Yeah, I don't think you'd particularly like Undertale. Anal Tale.
It's not for everyone. And I am quite surprised that some of the fandom is just so obsessed with the game itself. Like, it's really good. Don't get me wrong. But they're like latched onto it on a whole nother level that I haven't seen since like I was in high school and people were obsessed with The Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yeah.
That's what it reminds me of.
Well, you know, trends come and go and some people just get extremely passionate about things.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Undertale is the Nightmare Before Christmas of video games, I think.
There we go. That's the quote for the episode.
Yep. There it is, folks. And if you want more quotes like that, have a listen to some of our other episodes and follow us on our social media.
This is Halloween. This is Halloween.
No, we'll get demonetized. Not that we're making any money anyway. Okay.
We make so much money. What are you talking about?
So, what are we doing for next week? I think we're changing it up a little bit, aren't we?
That's the plan. Yep. Instead of doing a game, we're going to venture into the world of movies.
Dun, dun, dun.
Which are like video games, but without the gameplay.
Exactly. It'll be a bonus episode, not part of the mainstream ones, but we're trying to play more games in the background and give you content in the meantime while we cover bigger games. So, by popular demand, we will be doing Captain Pikachu. No.
Oh, my Lord.
We will be doing Detective Pikachu. Have you seen it before?
No, I have not. It's okay. I noticed it was on Amazon Prime, so I thought, free, I can watch that.
Okay. I have seen it before, but it's been a while, and I'm very interested to find out what you think about it, because you are not a Pokemon person.
What are you talking about? I am a Pokemon person. I love Pokemon.
No, you're not. You're not are you?
They are my favorite.
Okay. Anyway. You can find us on Instagram at goodbadbacklog. We are probably the most active there. You can also find us on Twitter at badbacklog, where I basically only really post when an episode comes out. But hey, if you want a notification for episodes come out, follow us there and you'll get one. We also have Twitch. As I make more money, I will be buying more things that I need to stream. So we will look at doing some streaming for Twitch. And it's obviously at goodbadbacklog for that. If I didn't mention it, because I can't remember. And shop.spreadshirt.com/goodbadbacklog for some merchandise. In Australia, it's getting cold. Buy a hoodie. It'll warm you up. In America, it's getting warm. Buy a singlet. It'll keep you cool. And if you're losing your hair, buy a hat. It'll cover your bald spot. How about a word from our sponsors? This episode, my sponsor is Excel Pet Intestinal All Wormer Tablets to make sure that your furry no longer has worms after they eat their own shit. Excel Pet.
Wow. I might get some of them for myself.
Don't scratch your ass and lick your fingers. You'll get worms.
Well, on a similar furry-related note, this episode is brought to you by Pet Stuffers. Are you sick and tired of the idea that your pets can't live forever? Go to Pet Stuffers, where all your dead pets will be taxidermied. And you can have them in your house forever. And soon, they'll be expanding into human taxidermy with grandparents forever. Go to Pet Stuffers today.
My favorite pet is a dead pet. All right, that's all we've got for you today, folks. See you in the next one.
Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.